I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days. And what I feel in my heart, they tell sincerely, no other words.
Patricia T. O'Connor joins me now. She's the author of a number of books on the language. Her first book actually has wound up becoming one of the more popular crossword puzzle clues. Will Shortz includes Woe Is I often in his crossword puzzles. I think that when you're included in the New York Times crossword puzzle, you've kind of made it, Pat.
Well, the thing is, I don't think there are too many good clues for which the answer is a three-letter word spelled I-S-I. So it's always woe blank.
So
there's another issy.
So if I want to make it into the Times crossword puzzle, I should come up with the title of a book that would lend itself to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Little did I know.
Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, there are a whole slew of books have followed. Mm-hmm. And you visit us once a month to talk about the language. And we often talk about things that people have written to you about, but also what's happening. Mm-hmm. And Christmas has a whole bunch of words that are unique to it.
Right.
Like Yule.
Exactly. Before Christmas was Christmas, it was Yule. And I'm not talking about
Did Brennan know about that?
Pardon me?
Did Yule Brynner know about that?
I wonder if he was named after Yule. Maybe he was a Christmas baby. No, I doubt it. But, yeah, before we had Christmas, we had Yule. And it originated, it was an old Scandinavian word, originally Joel. And it was a midwinter pagan festival celebrated in Northern Europe in the pre-Christian days. And it was of various lengths. Eventually, it came to mean in Old Norse a heathen feast lasting 12 days. And this was later absorbed into, it later became the name for Christmas around the 9th century. And by the way, that word Joel, it was similar words in other Scandinavian languages, but there's been some speculation that maybe we get the word jolly from that source, and also that the French jolie, pretty, and jolif, the other, an older word, jolif meaning festive. But that's kind of interesting that it comes from this pagan festival. But it became, as I say, our word for Christmas. And then Christmas itself came along in about the 12th century.
Well, I would assume that some of the other words we associate with the holiday, like nog, wassail.
Wassail, fossil. It was a Scandinavian toast. It meant to your health, be healthy. Basically, and then it later became the name for a drink traditionally served at Christmas, usually spiced wine or beer or something of the sort. And later it became a verb. To wassail was to party, to carouse. And I think Shakespeare used that form of the word.
And you say Christmas didn't come along for any number of centuries?
Right.
What was the holiday called before?
It was called Yule.
No, but that's in the north. Much of Christendom was
but Christendom,
in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, in Christendom, it was called Yule in English for 200 or 300 years before the word Christmas came along. And it was, interestingly, have you ever wondered why Christmas has a short I? It's not Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever wondered why?
Yes. I've wondered, but never found out. But I hope
you
I'm going to find
will.
Out now.
It's because the word Christ, as we know it, started out as Christ. It's not a name. It was a title. It comes from the Greek word Christos, meaning the anointed. And it for many, many hundreds of years, it had a short I. It was Christ. And in fact, it still is Christ in German, and that's where the term Kris Kringle comes from. It was the Christkindl, the Christ child who presumably distributed presents at Christmas time was the Kris Kindle, and that later evolved into Kris Kringle.
What are some of the other words?
Well, you mentioned wassail. Mm-hmm. And nog is another old English word. It's interesting that even though we think of Christendom as such a Latinate thing, it's an awful lot of the words from it come from Old English.
Could we talk about something else that's in the
yeah.
news these days?
Yeah,
the number one bestseller in nonfiction right now is a book called Going Rogue by somebody who ran for vice president. So I looked up the word rogue, and in my dictionary says an unprincipled, deceitful, and unreliable person, a scoundrel or rascal.
Mm.
Now, a vagrant, it
look
also
at the,
says.
Look at the adjective.
A horse inclined to shirk or misbehave. An individual exhibiting a chance and unusually inferior biological variation.
Now, that's interesting.
Now, if I were choosing a word for the title of my book,
you wouldn't call yourself rogue?
I probably wouldn't. There was a book many years ago, Rogue Male, but that was a bestseller. But that was a very different kind of book.
Yeah, that sounds like Rogue Elephant,
mm-hmm.
A big, destructive, untamable force. In fact, I see here in the adjective, one of the meanings is large, destructive, and anomalous or unpredictable, as in a rogue wave, a rogue tornado.
Mm.
So there you go.
Well, I just was wondering, where is the publisher when a title like that is proposed? Or don't they care?
I think probably the you know, I don't mean to denigrate the publisher, but I'm sure that the feeling was what will sell the most books, not what is most accurate or etymologically sound.
I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Still, I was amused when I realized that this is rather self-insulting.
It is. It is.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm here with Patricia T. O'Connor with one of the most popular segments we have on this show. I know because we encourage people to write to you, and many do, and I still wind up inundated with email messages, people assuming that I will pass them on to you, and they're right.
And I do try to answer everybody eventually. Takes me a while sometimes.
Did you get any really interesting ones after the last show?
Yes, I did, actually. I didn't bring any of them with me.
Okay, well, we'll do that next.
Because someone asked me, why is English a Germanic language? I'm repeatedly saying that on the air, and I guess I assume that that's a given, but someone asks, how come you say English is Germanic when it has all this Italian or Latin etymology, all this vocabulary from Latin and Greek? And
French.
Right. And the truth is that to go back to ancient Indo-European, it divided into seven or eight families of languages, one of which was Germanic and another of which was Italic, or popularly called Romance. And English is traced from the Germanic family. And even though it later adopted much of its vocabulary from other languages, it's still Germanic in its structure, which is why I'm always saying that the imposition of Latin grammatical rules onto English, a Germanic language, makes no sense and makes for very awkward expression.
Well, all the early invaders, the Angles and the Saxons, were Germanic language speakers, mostly from Denmark, I think, which is a Germanic, Danish is a Germanic language.
And so then all over Northern Europe and the Scandinavian languages.
And something I read, I may be wrong, but I seem to remember reading that William the Conqueror, who brought French into the language, actually was an Angle, who had conquered Normandy not, mm-hmm. or his father had conquered Normandy not long before 1066.
Right.
So there is really a very strong Danish component.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much so. A good share of our language comes from Scandinavian sources. Actually, the OED site Ask Oxford did a computerized analysis of 80,000 words from the old third edition of the Shorter Oxford Dictionary, and did a breakdown that shows of our vocabulary. And keep in mind, we're a Germanic language, but 28% of our vocabulary is borrowed from Latin, 28% from French. Germanic sources, 25%, Greek, 5%, and other miscellaneous accounts for the rest. So
it's a third, a third, a third.
It's about a third, a third, a third, Latin, French, and Germanic.
We go to John from Paramus. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy New Year to all. I just would like to know...
Just don't say Happy Holidays, because I get angry mail from people who feel that that is just a little too generic.
I never say Happy Holidays.
Okay, good.
And everybody says thank you for not saying that. So, but you don't have to say that. So anyway, I wish everyone a good holiday. How did Nicholas become Santa Claus, or how did Santa Claus come out of St. Nicholas or Kris Kringle or any of those things? And I'll listen to your answer. Thanks.
Thank you for calling.
I don't know whether Santa Claus or St. Nick came first, but these are all mythological characters. Santa Claus, Kris Kringle, St. Nicholas, they've all merged over the years, and I think by the time of the Victorian period, they had pretty much merged into one image of a fat guy in a red suit with white fur trimming. And they just all came together somehow. It's not very easy to sharply divide when one began and another ended.
And we thank you for your call. We go now to Michael from Rockaway. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon and happy holidays. It just covers everything succinctly and in a pithy way.
I'm with you. It's okay.
In Israel, I encountered the use of the word Sylvester for Christmas. It's used by Israeli Jews. I don't know if I don't know if Arabs use the same word, and I wondered if it's derived from a saint that has some association with the Christmas story, or I also think it has something to do with the new moon that occurs in December, which is when the month when Christmas falls out. So I'm not sure if it denotes the actual Christmas holiday or the new moon that occurs. When Christmas occurs.
Pat,
I can't answer that. I wonder if there's any connection with the medieval Latin Sylvanus, the god of the woods. I don't know.
Maybe one of our brilliant listeners has
an answer.
I'm sure
a listener will call in with that.
And we'll be inundated with emails for the next 2 years. But thank you so much for calling us. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with more of your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a message on our show page at wnyc.org. First this.
What I'd give to hear those three little words. Man, that's such a wonderful phrase.
We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor and taking your calls at 212-433-9692. We've also been getting comments on our show page. And Patrick from Brooklyn asks, what is the proper way to address two doctors of the same last name? Should it be Dear Doctors O'Connor?
I've never had a question like that. I don't. I I don't know.
Because I am in a situation where I often have two doctors on the show, and I sometimes say doctors Smith and Jones rather than saying Dr. Smith and Dr. Jones.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that in old fiction, sometimes you'll find two men addressed as Mr.s Smith and Jones or Messrs. Smith and Jones. So perhaps Doctors O'Connor would be correct, although
the
it's
Doctors
a little
O'Connor.
Startling.
Yeah, you'd have to suss it out.
Yeah, it's a little startling. I'm not sure how often that would come up, but perhaps in a hospital setting it does.
Anastasia from the Upper West Side, or is it Anastasia?
Anastasia.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Well, I want to comment on Santa Claus. The Greek Orthodox Church has Agios Vasilios, Saint Vasilios Basil, I guess, in English. And he is associated with the three magi that come to Christ to give gifts. And he comes the first of the year, a week later. Also, from what I read a long time ago, Vasilios was something like an archbishop or something in Antiochia. And he would help the poor. And he became very famous for that. And I guess it spread to become the modern Agios Vasilios we have. But we do not I was very surprised when I came to the States to find that Saint Nicholas was the supposedly Santa Claus. Nicholas is a saint in the Greek Orthodox, but he's the saint of the seas. He protects the sailors and so on and so on. He has nothing to do with Christmas or gifts. Well, anyway, Agios Vasilios is our Santa Claus.
Maybe that's why there's that schism between the Roman and the Eastern Church.
Well, things became different after that, but I believe he is the original.
That
brings gifts.
And I'm sure that's true. There's a lot of borrowing, isn't
right.
there, from one
and
culture to another?
I'll bet you just wanted a chance to use the word schism.
Of course. I'll do anything to use that pronunciation. Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
You have an answer to the Sylvester problem here?
And then some, maybe, and then also something from a long time ago. In Latin, there's, I believe it's Pinus Silvestre, which may have something to do with where the Israelis got the word, because it would be a conifer, an evergreen, like O Tannenbaum, which may be some of the German Jews brought to Israel. I mean, I have no idea. It's just a thought. And it's Silvestre with a T-R-E.
Well, Sylvanus does mean the woods.
Yeah, so maybe it has something to do with more of the pagan, the celebration of the fact that it's still evergreen. And maybe they just picked up on that.
Uh-huh.
And then a long, long time ago, people were talking about MEMS. And I didn't get a chance to call in, but I just wanted to say that, to my recollection, in French, the word MEM, M-E-M-E, with a circumflex over the E, means the same or similar.
Right.
I listened and I never heard anything more about it.
Right. I think when that subject first came up and it was referred to as memes, the bottom line is that it means an idea, a particle of an idea, the smallest particle, a sort of lowest common denominator intellectually.
And what does the dictionary say the pronunciation should be? Is it mem or meme?
Actually, let's check here.
Because the French pronunciation doesn't often apply. In fact, there's a whole dictionary of words that look exactly the same in English and French and mean different things.
Yeah, it's our dictionary here has meme, a unit of cultural information, such as a cultural practice or idea. And it's from the Greek mimema. I guess mimesis. Yeah, also see mimesis. So it is...
we're pronouncing it meme from now on.
Meme.
Along with schism. few others.
Right.
And because pronunciation is my forte. Jack from Queens. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hiya, folks. I'm glad to hear you use the word schism. Not too many of us call it schism anymore.
That's two of you in the New York area, you and Leonard.
I remarked about Sylvester. I know in the Catholic Church, in the Western Church, December 31st is the Feast of St. Sylvester. And they used to say if the last person to get up on New Year's Eve morning was Sylvester. And I noticed that there are a lot of Polish in my neighborhood now, and I see signs in the window for Sylvester, which is obviously it's a New Year's Eve party. And I know in German it's Sylvesterfeier, I think. So it's another name for New Year's Eve.
Well,
boy, I think that
we learn new things every day on the show.
It's probably possible to celebrate nonstop from about mid-December through the first week in January, if you really want
I'll drink to that.
Going from country to country and custom to custom.
Thank you so much for calling us. James from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I heard, by the way, this is not what I call, but I did hear on the radio that someone pronounced Sarah Palin's book as Going Rouge, which I think is really funny. But the thing
well, that's only people from the red states.
But I did hear on the radio several months ago this line, less amount of townhomes were sold last month.
Less Ooh. Amount of townhomes?
were sold. So isn't it a fewer number of townhouses was sold?
Now, how about just fewer townhouses were sold?
Yes, fewer townhouses. Exactly.
Well, the word few is disappearing, although there are times when the use of less instead of few sounds so awful.
Oh, sure. If you're talking about individual things, nothing really does it better than fewer. You wouldn't say, I see fewer dogs on leashes in the park these days. I mean, that's about the only, you couldn't say less dogs. But with things like fractions, percentages, things like that, even though we might say 50% of voters were, or fewer than 50% of the, less than 50% of the voters turned out, and that would be perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
There was a New Yorker cartoon recently in which the 10 items or less sign has been altered to 10 items or fewer, and the cashier is saying, well, I was an English major.
See what kind of career you end up with as an English major these days.
Yeah. I thought we would understand that. Yes. Richmondville? Richard?
It's Richard from Richmond Hill.
Richmond Hill. They wrote Richmondville.
No, close enough.
Okay, Richmond Hill in Queens. Yes, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to congratulate your show from the fact that it helped to elevate the word hinky from police jargon to universal application. I called a few years ago about hinky.
Right. It was we did talk about hinky a while back.
Yeah, to act suspiciously. And the only place I heard it was on police shows. Finally, when Leonard was on vacation, one of Jonathan Capehart's guests referred to Obama's health plan, the way you were going to pay for it, as hinky. You know, so it's getting a universal appeal. But the final clincher was David Letterman in his mea culpa about the blackmailer, referred to the blackmailer as hinky. So here's a word that I guess is getting a more universal appeal. Although the only non-police thing was the Obama reference that I've heard so far.
Well, so there we are. We're trying to enrich the language on the show.
We do our best.
Thank you so much for calling us. And Avi from the East Village, you're on the air. Avi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I recently went to Chicago, and I really liked the song Chicago, that Todlin Town, but I realized I have no idea what Todlin means.
Well, toddling usually means walking along in a staggering kind of way, like a toddler, I suppose. But I'm not sure if that's what the meaning is supposed to be in the song. Chicago, that is it Toddlin Town? It's not Toddlin Town?
No, I think it might very well be what you suggest, because the next line is the town that Billy Sunday could not shut down. And Billy Sunday, for those people who have a sense of history, was an early fire-breathing minister who would come into a town and preach against drink.
Mm-hmm.
Among other things.
Right. And actually, he would have been on popular on talk radio these days, I think.
he would have written a book with the title Rogue in it.
Right.
Thank you so much for calling us. We hope that's the right answer. Scott from Newark, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, Morristown, New Jersey, actually, calling in from the home of Thomas Nast, the famous political cartoonist of the late 1800s. And Nast gave us a number of really great images, including the modern image of our Santa Claus. And also Uncle Sam and the donkey and the elephant of our political parties.
That's true.
That's a great story. His home is still historically preserved here today.
And there's a myth about Thomas Nast, actually, that he's the source of the word nasty. That's actually not true. The word nasty was around before. Yeah, the nasty was around before Thomas Nast.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have fit him because some of his images were pretty nasty.
Well, he was very witty. His mm-hmm. most famous cartoon of Boss Tweed as a vulture, saying, "Let us pray," P-R-E-Y.
Right.
Pretty
that
clever.
That was a famous one. And Boss Tweed supposedly offered him $500,000 to blow town and stop doing those cartoons, and he wouldn't take it. So,
gee, I would have.
Yeah, that was a lot of money in those days.
yeah, who knows what he had skimmed that off of. Iris from Larchmont, you're on the air.
Hi. The first time I ever saw this, I was about 10 on the subway, and it said, "Please keep hands off of the doors."
Mm.
And ever since then, that "off of" has bugged me, and I'm noticing that it's more and more out there. Mm. Even announcers will say, you know, the news about this came off of this source. And do you think it's going to become accepted usage?
I wouldn't think so. I think it still has an illiterate ring to it, myself. Like, where is it at?
Mm-hmm.
It's just there's an unnecessary preposition in there, and I think it'll blow over. I don't think it's going to go into standard usage. It may hang around, but I think it'll always be considered illiterate.
Well, but there are any number of things like that when people say he graduated high school.
Yeah, that's a little different, though, Leonard. I wouldn't call that illiterate. That's just a usage convention. And I think that eventually graduated high school will probably become acceptable. It's not now. Enough people object to it, so it's not. But that there's no real grammatical foundation for that. It's just a convention. That's how we use the word graduated. But fell off of a truck, that is not just a usage business. That's really, if it's not ungrammatical, it borders on it.
If we say fell off a truck, is that better?
Fell off a truck, there you go.
Except that you hear it now in speeches, it's all over the place.
Hmm.
You know, announcers on the radio and unfortunately and on television will, you know, say this came off of or...
Well, maybe...
Keep your hands off of the tree.
maybe I'm wrong, and it'll someday become acceptable.
We have run out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The next book, when is it coming out?
you tell me.
Are you working on another book?
Not right now.
Well, meanwhile, we have so many.
Yes,
and
there
the latest
are not
being?
Well, the third edition of Woe Is I came out in September.
And there's Woe Is I for kids, Woe Is I
yes,
Junior.
Yes.
If you want to ask Pat a question directly, you can email her at mailbox@grammarphobia. You have to know how to spell grammar. Many people get it wrong. Grammarphobia.com. Also, you can go to grammarphobia.com and click on Pat's blog to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. She'll be with us again on January 20th. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
On tomorrow's show, chemist and industrial hygienist Manona Russell looks at the many new chemicals that are being put into everyday products and the potential effect they can have on our health. Also, I'll speak with a curator at the Paley Center for Media for a preview of a new Criterion DVD collection called The Golden Age of Television, and then we'll speak to people who argue that we are living in a new golden age of television, plus our latest underreported segments. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Colin Adams Toomey, Adam Delahanty, and Sarah Mazel. Debbie Fountain and Michael Lupica were at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.